You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. You know, the one thing that's nice when you're watching a foreign language film, especially something from France, right? Because French, they're just classier than we are, right? End of story. So even if it's like a big action movie from France, you're like, this is definitely going to be cerebral. And I can't finish that sentence. This movie is so stupid.
You know, what people forget is that the French are perfectly capable of making crap like everybody else. It's just until streaming sources like Netflix, it was hard to get that crap. But, you know, it does exist, and now you can see it anytime. This is basically direct-to-video quality action filmmaking from France, and you're going to get exactly what you pay for.
Yeah, director Julien Leclerc, who, by the way, spells his name really cool, so I'll give him super points for that. I was like, man, that's awesome. But made this movie Earth and Blood that Netflix picked up. This guy is known for what they generously describe as lean action films, which is to say very low budget, very sparse on characterization, very sparse on much of anything, quite frankly. Basically like that same crap Liam Neeson's been shitting out for 20 years.
The minute they're ready to do a Liam Neeson reboot of, you know, that direct-to-video sequel that doesn't star Liam Neeson, whenever they're ready to do that version of Taken, they are calling this guy. And it's probably worth every penny they're going to pay him.
They'll just make Taken whatever number they're at the remake of this. Like the way they did with the Die Hards after a while. They're like, hey, there's this book that has absolute or foreign language film that has nothing to do with Die Hard. Let's just take it and rewrite it so it's about John McClane. Yeah. We'll just do the same thing.
I had misgivings about this when I saw it because it's such a generic fucking title, Earth and Blood. I'm like, what does that even mean? God. Is this like the French version of Blood and Soil? Is this about white supremacists? And then when I read the synopsis, I was like, oh, cool. This is Die Hard in a sawmill. I am so into this. And then I saw the movie.
I actually recommended this because I saw two different really strong reviews for this. And now I know never to trust those critics again. But speaking of critics, I am Chris. Joining me and who you've heard obliviating on here is my friend Marco.
Bloviating.
Oh, sorry. Bloviating. Right. You are correct. He even bloviates when he corrects me in my grammar. But that's Marco. Say hi again.
Hello.
And then we've got the hunter, Joshua.
Hey, how's it going? To the Liam Neeson point, I mean, I think Liam Neeson would love to be in a new action movie where he's just hunting black people. I mean, that is his thing now, so.
I legit choked on my beer.
You're welcome.
To be fair, like, the hunter here is not a white guy either, though. So I got to give this movie points that, unlike another action movie I just saw on Netflix I'll be reviewing soon, it's not just a white guy killing lots of people of color. No, it is another person of color killing other people of color. So that feels a little less, you know, questionable.
Everybody in this movie is of African descent somehow, either by Tunisia or Algeria. They're just all French citizens.
True. Yeah, and yet, I gotta be honest, and I'm gonna sound like a Fox News correspondent right now, but every black dude looked the same to me. And I was like, one has cornrows, one is like a buzz cut. I was like, this is a little confused. Like, so when one went down, I went, oh, did they die? Or is this like Archer where there's a clone of the of them or something?
But I mean, it was like the war between light-skinned black guys and dark-skinned black guys, no question.
True, yeah.
Yeah. But the story here, such as it is, it starts off with the most mystifying what-the-fuck-just-happened botched heist ever. Like, there's a heist. It's unclear what they're trying to heist and from who. It's unclear what really happens during it. We know it goes wrong, but yet somehow, apparently, they still come out with successfully getting stuff that we never see that part. Not clear how that even happened.
I got the impression they were robbing a police evidence locker.
Yeah, I guessed that, but even so, it's very unclear what exactly is happening during that sequence. But the upshot is some of the guys who survived the heist decided rather than supply the drugs back to the guy who paid for the heist, Super Mr. God of Drugs guy, like the scariest looking black guy in the movie, played by Eric Ebuani, who has been in quite a few films that were not great, like Transporter 3. But
yeah,
what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And of course, he's a little pissed about it, but they have, us never actually seeing this sequence, have given it to one of their younger brothers who wants nothing to do with it, but I guess kind of pressured him into it where he had no choice, and keeping it in the getaway car, which he went and hid at his boss's place. Now, most of that we never even see on camera. They just tell us that this is what happened. The main character is actually Sammy I have no idea how to say this name. Marco,
I believe it's Bouajila. He plays a guy named Saeed.
He's the biggest actor in this whole thing. He's been in movies pretty steadily since 1991. Like, and he has a huge list of films you've never seen.
Yeah. He's the best part of this movie.
But he's an older guy. We see that, oh, he's got cancer. It's not good. He's not going to make it. And he owns this big logging company that he got from with really not necessary sequence where he meets his sister-in-law who never pops into the film ever again. So there's no reason for her to be there except for him to have someone to tell he's dying of cancer.
He doesn't even say that. He goes into the subplot about the fact that the sawmill is losing business and he's going to have to sell, but he's going to use the money to send his daughter to art school, and he's going to make sure that she gets her cut of the inheritance now that her sister is dead. You know, your father taught me everything about the sawmill business. Your family's been good. All of this is just to prove that Saeed is a good, upstanding dude. And that scene, you're right, has no relevance ever again later.
Really, a lot of this is him trying to protect his daughter. It's his daughter. Do we need an extra subplot scene to explain that he cares about his daughter?
So this was like if you put Cop Out, The Equalizer, and then like Taken 3 in a blender, and you took all the things that were somewhat good about those movies and just left the bad. Because I was sitting there watching this going, this is under 90 minutes. The last movie I remember being this lean was Jonah Hex, and I think I like this slightly more than Jonah Hex, if there's any credit to give this movie, but it felt like there's at least 30 minutes missing from this, because I couldn't remember a character's name. It just felt like we went from one scene to the next with no smooth transitions at all. When we get to the whole sawmill kind of, you know, Skyfall-esque kind of fight near the end, it feels so empty because I don't give a damn about anyone who's in this, so...
Yeah. By nature leads me to finishing the plot description, Joshua.
It's okay, Joshua. We all do it. It's really a contest to see how long we can derail Chris from delivering the synopsis.
It's not. Do not believe him. So he's there at the sawmill with the guy who works for him, who's got the car. He finds the car. He sees there's drugs in it. He's like, what the fuck is this? He's got a daughter who's deaf, and they overplay the deaf thing in here for no reason. It never really plays out. You think it's one of those things that's going to play out to a gimmick at one point during it, like, oh, this will be a gimmick. It's like a Chekhov's hearing aid, you know? But no, it's not. There is no real reason other than don't you feel that much more sorry for this girl that needs to be protected. So all the bad guys show up because they get the address from torturing the brother of the guy who works at the sawmill, are like, hey, you could come out here and we could just work this out. And it's like, well, no, because the first guy you sent here was the main... most evil, scary black guy's brother, and you killed his ass.
So now it's personal.
This is Rambo Last Blood, only not offensive, just bad. It's just dull. We've seen this plot in so many bad, junky action movies, and this adds nothing to it.
I was trying to go ahead and interrupt Chris earlier because he put way more synopsis in the plot than the people did who wrote this movie. So I was trying to save him some time because, yeah, this is just empty. By the time it got to the end, I was sitting there going, it didn't even feel like I'd watched a movie. It felt like a fever dream, and a very quick fever dream at that.
Yeah, that ends abruptly.
I thought there were two kills that were actually effective. There were two scenes where I went, oh, shit. It's almost like a Transformers movie. It would mean so much more if I gave a damn about anyone in the movie. I will say the one scene where Sarah drops her hearing aid and the guy is kind of yelling at her, I thought that was the one scene I kind of went, okay, you at least played with the audio in a way. It kind of reminded me of that scene from the Sherlock Holmes reboot where a gun goes off and you kind of hear that like sound kind of fades in and out. I went, okay, that was mildly clever. But that's one scene in an 80-minute movie that's about 4 minutes. So
that's the only reason the daughter is deaf, just so they can have that one sequence where they're going to stage the action without any audio. Clever idea, but never paid off in any way.
You pointed out yourself. You saw it in a fucking Sherlock Holmes big budget film. And that was not the first time or the last time someone's done that same gimmick.
Oh, absolutely not.
It's not clever or original, but it is why it's there. This whole thing feels so incredibly, just wildly derivative. It's all just gray and dark as fuck. I don't mean in plot. I mean just how it's shot. It's wildly unattractive looking film. It's just gloomy.
So the scene, there's a scene where there's like a hand-to-hand combat scene where a fire had gone off. And that scene is so hard to see what's happening. I just started laughing. I was like, oh, this is adorable. This is apparently your first time directing something because I can't tell what the fuck is happening. It's that Bourne level of like quick cuts where it's like, I think something cool happened. But
the thing is, it's not his first time. This guy's been cranking out a movie like every 2 years. I mean, he should have learned something by now. And you know what? I'm not going to lie. I actually had some high hopes for this being a cool little B-movie. I was like, it's barely 90 minutes. What's really disappointing to me is that this is about two drafts away from being, you know, a lean, mean, efficient little B-movie. I love the idea of Die Hard in a sawmill. This thing checks off a lot of my boxes. It's a protagonist who isn't like an action hero. He's just an everyman, but he has a special set of skills that, you know, enables him to fight the bad guys. No, I mean, I love the idea. It's like, hey, I run a sawmill. I know this place better than anybody here. I know this area. I checks off that box of, you know, city slickers getting their asses handed to them by country folk that they underestimate. You know, it's got all of those things that I really kind of like. And I love movies that show me how things are done. I love the idea you're in a sawmill and you're like, here's how we lift up these logs. Here's how the logs are put through the splitter. Here's how we use this contraption that uses suction, you know, to lift up heavy planks. Here's how we plane everything through the laser-guided planer. Every time I saw that, I thought, A, I know more how a sawmill works, and B, the filmmakers are telling me they're setting up something that's going to pay off in the third act, and it never fucking happens.
He uses the machines to A, distract them with like, look over here now by the sound of this machine, or B, the most unnecessary, wildly unnecessary and gratuitous gore scene I may have seen in a movie like this year.
Yeah. There were so many ways to kill people in that environment and they did not use it. Like I said, Die Hard in a sawmill. It's like, look, I don't have any weapons, but I have this facility and I'm going to use my knowledge of it to take these guys out one by one. And it really ends up a lot of times just him running around pallet of wood or running through the woods. And it's like they have a cool location that I thought was going to be the center point of the centerpiece of the movie. And they just whiffed it. It's like, dude, that's why I was so annoyed, because the first act, I thought this is actually possibly going to be a good movie. And then it's a stealth failure. It's like, okay, you know, it's like, I like everything. Even that scene that's with, you know, the sister-in-law that ends up not being relevant. I'm like, okay, this is going to pay off later, but it doesn't.
I was bored pretty much until about the 40-minute mark. I remember kind of going, oh, now you're kind of starting to get going. The gratuitous gore scene that Chris is talking about, it made me laugh really hard because it made me think of John Wick 3, you can connect the dots there. When the scene happens, there's no fucking reason for it. This is just a waste of my time, even for it being on Netflix. If there's one good thing about the quarantine, it's that this didn't get a theatrical release, and I didn't have to pay to see it. So, I mean, because if I had paid $10 to see this, I'd be way more fierce than I am.
It's right French. You would not have had to pay $10 to see it. This was always going to be on Netflix.
That's fair.
Yeah. No, this is totally direct to DVD quality. It just happens to be on Netflix. And sometimes they get some good stuff from their foreign collaborators. But man, this one is just, I am normally the guy saying, please stop making remakes of every fucking movie. But this is a movie I'd love to see remade. I would actually love to see someone take this premise and go, you know what? Why don't we make these characters interesting, stop making them do stupid things, and actually exploit the location that, you know, we've provided and create an action thriller in an environment you've never seen before? That would have been cool.
get a director who actually knows how to make an action movie.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I keep thinking about it when I say gratuitous. I don't mind gore. I like gore in a movie if it makes you go, wow, that was cool. That was, like, made sense. But the language of the way he shot it makes no sense. It's like it stops this action fight scene to just go, ha, look what's going to happen now. And you're like, why? Why is that happening now? That doesn't make any sense. Why would the fight have gone that way? That seems like it's more trouble than it's worth. Anyway, let's go to final thoughts. Joshua, why don't you get us started?
All right. So the one thing we didn't mention, too, is like the audio didn't match with the lip syncing. That was really distracting. And I thought it was my Netflix, so I like turned off my router and everything. And no, like the subtitles don't match up with the audio. It's a really weird thing. So it's like they just didn't give a shit. This could have been something at least like trashy fun. It's not. It's dumb. The hardest laugh I got in this movie is when Saeed goes ahead and hits one of the gangsters in a tractor, like in a tractor, and the car explodes, and the explosion scares him. And they show the black guy all like charred up, and I went, "Well, he doesn't look much darker than he already was." positive, but this is a bad movie. There's really no reason to watch it. I'll give this 4 charred black guys out of 10.
Marco?
I mean, speaking of that scene that Joshua just mentioned, I kind of had the same reaction because it leads to, like, basically a slow speed car chase with one guy trying to get around a tractor. Yeah. And I'm just like, really? This is where this movie is going.
Well, I mean, it's like that car chase that goes on forever, but not as long as the two people running through the woods with the person chasing them does, which happens for longer than the running time of the actual film. I don't know how, but it did.
And none of these guys know how to fucking shoot a gun.
Good God.
It's like, you have automatic weapons and you haven't hit anybody.
They're all former stormtroopers.
Yeah, you know, that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, oh my God, this all makes sense because there is actually a photo of the original stormtroopers in Tunisia back in 77 with Tunisian locals. They're all a bunch of, all of these guys emigrated to France, their grandkids became drug dealers, and they too have the gene that prevents them from targeting anybody accurately.
The grand earth and blood unification theory by
this is headcanon now. It's all true. Yeah, like I said, I was rooting for this movie. I love the premise of it. This is on paper the kind of pulpy 90-minute B-movie that I would love for all of the reasons I've already mentioned. Unfortunately, it feels like it was made by somebody who's seen action movies, who likes action movies, who's copied a lot of those tropes, but doesn't really know how to put them together. It's like a child going, well, I've seen my parents make an omelet, so I'm just going to throw things, including the eggs, directly into the pan and hope that an omelet comes out. And of course, it doesn't. I'm going to give this 4.5 out of 10 bags of cocaine.
Boy, y'all are kinder than I are with your numerical ratings, which we all know is nonsense anyway. The idea of reducing art to a number is stupid. But still, I'm like, y'all are saying it's just under average. I'm like, no, it's not. It's much worse than that.
It didn't offend me morally.
But I'll give points to where I'll raise something up to that level if I'm like, well, at least it was competently shot. I don't know if I can say that about Earth and Blood, that it was. It's an ugly looking film. There's a lot of, do you just not understand the language of film moments when I was watching it? It's not competently shot. This is a movie that somehow seems to have at least enough of a budget to afford decent equipment, if you will, like cameras and sound recording equipment, and yet still is just junk. And maybe there's some, obviously, like I said, from aforementioned people who have done reviews who liked this, there's some people who like junky cinema who thought this was great. I don't know if they were just impressed by people speaking French. That's all I can think of, because there's nothing here to really like. The performances aren't terrible, and the daughter is hot. That's about all I can think of. I'm gonna give this 2 out of 10 pointlessly dismembered hands. You knew that's what I was coming up with, because that just bugged the shit out of me.
Oh, I saw what you did there.
Oh, God.